Borjofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. It's Tuesday night, and here we are, safe and sound. Phone number, as you know, if you'd like to be on the program, 1-800-222-5222. And if you can hear my voice, I'm coming to you loud and clear from the Sweet James Studios in an undisclosed location on the right side of the orange curtain. So, do you ever wonder where this entire Trump-Russia thing is headed, right? I mean, we cannot stop hearing about it. Trump-Russia. Collusion. Conspiracy between the Trump campaign, alleged conspiracy between the Trump campaign and the Russian government. And so I for a long time, I've always thought that this was a sort of a fiction created to help explain a crushing defeat. I mean, what better way to explain how Hillary Clinton, the anointed Hillary Clinton, how she could possibly lose to an orange buffoon? Well, the best way to do it is to say, well, of course, there was outside manipulation, there was collusion, and this really the election didn't happen the way it should have. But I always thought it was really just a way to explain a defeat. Well, no, there is and there has been a development, and I well, no, this is being reported in Newsweek. Does that make it more credible? Yeah, I mean, it makes it more credible as a representation of what the left actually thinks. Because Newsweek published a piece today that put forward a five-step plan of how Hillary Clinton could actually become president in the place of one Donald Trump. No, they're serious about this. There's a Harvard University professor that they've latched onto named Lawrence Lessig, and they're describing him as a constitutional law expert. Now, I will tell you first what the five steps are, because I think you might be curious, right? Sam, is this possible? Is this within the realm of possibility? Stay tuned. I will explain my thoughts on it, but let me first give you the five steps, because you've got to understand how this is going to happen. This is how it's going to happen. They're laying it out. Number one, step one. Trump is definitively going to be found to have colluded directly with Russia, and he'll be forced to resign or be impeached. So that's step one. And see, it comes back again to Trump-Russia, right? They are so keen on this. So he's going to resign or be impeached, right? And by the way, isn't that funny? Can you picture Trump resigning? Yeah. Number two, step two. If Trump is removed, Vice President Mike Pence would become president. Okay, so that's step two. Pence, right? I mean, I guess this professor here is a con law expert. I think you can find this on Wikipedia. It's called the Order of Succession. So Trump's removed, Pence goes in. Step three, Pence becomes president. He should resign too. This is from Newsweek. He should resign too, given that he benefited from the same help from Mother Russia. No, this is real. Okay, step four. I don't want to leave you hanging. If Pence resigns before appointing a vice president, Ryan, this is referring to Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, Ryan would become president. Step five. The final step. Are you ready for it? This is how it all happens. If Ryan becomes president, then he, Ryan, should do the right thing and choose Clinton for vice president, and then he should resign. And that's their plan. This is Julie Glum writing for Newsweek. And the first thing I asked when this beautiful piece of journalistic wonderment came across my desk, the first thing I asked is, you know, I looked, and is it from the opinion section, right? Is this an opinion piece written by some outside columnist? No, this is a staff writer. This is Newsweek. This is why they don't have a magazine anymore. And they've moved to only online content. You can't, that's right, you can't even use it for the gerbils anymore. But this is the kind of fantasy that the Democrats are engaging in. They are so, you know what five-step program here I'm thinking of? I'm thinking of the five stages of grief. And the first step being denial. They're thinking about steps 1 through 5. They're still in total denial. They think this is pure, unadulterated fantasy. And underlying it, I think the result of this is that you have a sizable portion of people out there who are not happy with Trump. They're not happy with the Trump presidency, and they're taking their, how would I describe it? They're taking their hopes, okay, that everybody that they have to get rid of Trump someday and get rid of him, and they're turning there are people that actually think, right, that their resistance is valid. And I wonder how many of these people are inside of the government. I wonder how many of these people are the unnamed administrative full-time deep state staff that we hear about that are obstructing Trump's agenda because they wholeheartedly believe that Trump's going to be out of there, that he is so deep into colluding with Putin, this is a matter of time before Mueller and his team strips and peels away this and gets to the heart of the scandal. Meanwhile, there's absolutely nothing there. The update, if you want the update, are you ready for it? There may or may not have been $100,000 spent by Russia on Facebook ads. You think that's a lot of money? Do you know what a modern presidential campaign costs? It's about $1 billion. Now, Trump spent a lot less. Okay, he did, because he went out there and created his own media. Every time he opened his mouth and said anything outrageous, 35 cameras from every network showed up and covered it. That was Trump's secret. But generally speaking, about $1 billion. What is $100,000 worth of Facebook ads? It is literally passing gas in a stiff wind. It's nothing. I'll tell you, even in my business, in a world of advertising, in my business, $100,000 doesn't go very far to promote a single business. It's nothing. It's literally nothing. And this is what the team is doing and peeling back all these layers. Meanwhile, did you hear, and this fits into this, and it's important, because it came out very quietly. The major networks, at least CNN and MSNBC, are not covering it for obvious reasons. But TheHill.com today reported that the FBI actually uncovered and was investigating for about a 5-year period alleged Russian bribery of top Obama administration officials in order to get the uranium deal done. Do you remember this? This is the uranium deal that was in Peter Schweizer's book, The Clinton Cash Book, and it dealt with a company called Uranium One. Let me just quickly, just so you remember what this was all about. Remember, I just said the big smoking gun here is $100,000 spent by Russia on some Facebook ads. Wait till you hear these figures. Okay, it's a lot more than $100,000. There was a company, it was Uranium One, it was Canadian owned, it belonged to a big billionaire out there, Frank Gistra, I think was his name. This company, the Clintons helped him, Bill and Hillary Clinton helped him get a big deal of mining uranium in Kazakhstan, which is a former Soviet satellite republic near Russia, and the U.S. So they helped this company get big, okay? They got a bunch of new mining contracts. And as soon as they got those contracts, this guy, this billionaire and the board of the company went to sell itself. They wanted to sell the company to Russia. And it required, whenever uranium's a big deal, it's used in nuclear weapons. So whenever you're selling something that is of strategic importance to the country, you've got to get approval from the government. Now, I'm going to ask you, where do you think that approval has to come from? Specifically, it comes from the State Department. Now, who during all relevant periods was the Secretary of State? That's right, Hillary Clinton. So listen to this. At and around the time that they were doing this deal, that they wanted, that they applied, and in fact, I think it was just weeks before they applied for permission, there were 9 shareholders, and all this has been proven, 9 shareholders that paid, are you ready for this amount? $145 million to the Clinton Foundation. And then lo and behold, I don't want to spoil anything here, but lo and behold, the deal gets approved. Surprise, surprise. Now, the truly stunning thing here is that no one said boo about it. And the FBI and the Department of Justice under Obama swept this thing under the rug big time. You want to talk about collusion? You want to talk about bribery? And the FBI was investigating this actively. They had it. They had the guy. They charged a Russian guy. They ended up sending him to prison for some money laundering charges. But the Hill.com, they go through it step by step. And they found that nuclear Russian nuclear officials had routed literally millions of dollars to various people inside the U.S. government. And the FBI had it. So the $1 million question is, or I would say the $145 million question is, why did nothing come of it? Why didn't it go anywhere? And the answer is so simple. The government, the establishment will always look after itself. And as this thing began heating up closer to the election, you've got to realize what the calculus was. The calculus was the real fear that any kind of scandal that touches the Clintons means a problem for the candidate. And the candidate, Hillary, wasn't just the Democratic Party candidate versus a Republican candidate. Hillary was an establishment candidate versus an upstart, versus a revolutionary, versus someone who promised, who ran a campaign from the get-go, that promised a wrecking ball to everything that Washington holds dear. So every person that is on this thing, from Loretta Lynch to the FBI, to the Department of Justice, everybody that is on this, what's their enormous fear? I don't think they would mind a George Bush candidate. I don't think they'd even mind a Mitt Romney candidate running on the other side. Although arguably, of course, we know that Loretta Lynch, there were a number of things that she kind of swept under the rug when she was in the DOJ. But what did they want? They didn't. This, it's so transparent and so obvious. They did. They if anything bad came out about Hillary, who would it affect? Her, of course. And it would tip the scales potentially toward Trump. And it was an avoid this at all costs. You saw the news story, by the way. This was just reported over the weekend. I didn't get to it yesterday, but you know that Comey, this came out. Newsweek reported this. Newsweek, of all people, they reported Comey drafted a statement ending the email investigation into Hillary's server before he even interviewed Hillary Clinton. Think about that. Can you imagine? By the way, just imagine you commit a very simple crime. Let's just say it's a serious crime, but a run-of-the-mill crime. You rob a bank. Let's say that. And now imagine that the police end their investigation into you and into the, you know, alleged crime that you've committed. And they, before even interviewing you, before even talking to you. It's literally inconceivable. It flies in the face of any good practices in law enforcement, let alone a serious investigation such as this one. And it's obvious it was a total racket. While you and I were watching the news and going, boy, I really hope Comey goes after this. I really, really hope that Comey just comes out. Remember what everybody told us, by the way? Comey, he's a Boy Scout. Comey, he's a straight shooter. He is going to call it like he sees it. That was the line. That was what we were being told. And we, everybody, ate it up. Again, and I will add this bit of flavor to this. This entire investigation into the $145 million bribe, there's no other way of putting it. Right? Clinton Foundation gets $145 million and presto, this big deal that they're pushing gets approved. You know who opened that investigation and managed it for a number of years? Bob Mueller, who is now the head of the Trump-Russia investigation, who's a special counsel investigating Trump's $100K, supposedly, that Russia paid to influence our election. What a joke. All right, don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KVC.
News, talk, evolve. 790 KVC.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Now, I think that many of you get a little lost in the world of large numbers, and it's understandable. So we're talking about this staggering sum of $145 million given to the Clinton Crime Family Foundation. By nine directors and shareholders of a company that wished to sell itself to Russia. And then presto, the deal was approved by Hillary Clinton's State Department. Now, this is old news. I recognize that. What's new news is we now find out that there was an open investigation into this deal by the FBI. And nothing happened. Zip. And I was comparing it to other news this week, a big revelation in the Trump-Russia scandal. Apparently $100,000 was paid by some Russian spies to take out ads on Facebook to help sway the election. And I know these are, look, $100,000 is big money. $145 million is bigger money. I want you to understand something, though, very important about fundraising. I have a few charities that I really particularly care about, one being the March of Dimes. I will tell you about something about charity. It is extremely difficult to raise money, even for a worthy cause like prenatal care and premature children. Very, very difficult. People don't just drop $145 million payments. I don't care if it's among nine people. I mean, in the world of charity, it's unprecedented, because that's the argument here, right? The Clintons are arguing we're running a very successful charity and we're helping Haiti and blah, blah, blah. And this has nothing to do with anything else. This is a separate transaction that in no way influenced us. And I'm running it against my own life experience, which is, but these are inconceivable sums. They're not inconceivable, but they are enormous sums in the world of of fundraising, of charity fundraising, if we're going to call the Clinton Family Foundation a charity. I'll give you an example. My law school, Chapman, received an almost $70 million gift. An endowment gift. And that is the biggest that I mean, it's the second, I think at the time it was made, it was the second biggest gift made to any law school. I'm giving that to you as a detail for scale. I think maybe, was it Harvard? Harvard get a bigger one? I forget. But one of the big top 10 schools got a bigger gift. People do not drop $145 million out of the sky to help Haiti. It wasn't about that. It was an influence campaign. It's graft. It's bribery. It was always about people paying money to an organization that served on some foundational level as a Clinton's personal piggy bank. And then in turn, great things would happen to them because they had the ear of the State Department, which decides a lot of stuff and more than just meddling in diplomacy. So this is so scandalous. And that Newsweek, like I read to you, has actually five easy steps of how we're going to get President Trump to become President Hillary by getting Trump out because he's colluded with Russia. And the solution of the left is to put Hillary in, who literally was bought and paid for by Putin's puppets to the tune of almost, you know, millions of dollars, $145 million. And then some. This is just one transaction. It's stunning. It's absolutely stunning. And the woman has no gall. And I, you know, we can disagree. We can have a friendly disagreement about the future of this country and about Trump and about where, you know, where we need to be as a, you know, where we need to be as a people. But you know, to think like this Newsweek piece, to think that somehow Hillary is the answer and that she is the, you know, I'm with her. You can't possibly still be with her. I if you are, you're just nuts. I don't know what else to say. Okay. You might not go to jail for $145 million bribe from Russia, but you will go to jail if you steal $1,200,000 in fajitas. And that's a real thing. I'll tell you about that after the news with John Wolf. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation Live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
News. Talk. Evolve. 790 KABC.
Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. If you'd like to be on the program, 1-800-222-5222. Sam@samnation.com is the email. Hillary can get away with taking a $145 million bribe, but do not for a minute think you can get away with stealing $1.2 million worth of fajitas. This is real. There is a Gilberto Escamilla who allegedly pulled off this epic heist. No, it took him 9 years. I mean, what did you think? There was $1 million in fajitas just laying around somewhere? No, Mike. What kind of fajitas would those have to have been? Pretty freaking delicious, if you ask me. No, he's working for the Juvenile Justice Department in Cameron County, Texas. So he's a county employee. And, you know, initially, the funny thing is, they just thought it was a mistake because of the staggering sum. They just thought that there's no way. Now, here's the exact amount in case you are particular about facts, and we here on the program are very particular. $1,251,578 worth of fajitas over 9 years. And then he would resell them to people. So I don't know what the black market is in fajitas, but apparently it's pretty good. Yeah, he's going to go to jail. It doesn't matter. That's a lot of money. And it's first degree theft, serious jail time. And in Texas, you know, they might actually fry him. And I'm not talking about the fajitas. I mean, you know, they're very serious about this in Texas. Do not ever go to Texas to commit any type of crime. You're going to say, if Hillary Clinton had done any of these shenanigans in Texas, things might have gone very differently. You see, I think the thing that frustrates me is don't you get the feeling that there's two sets of rules? I mean, it begs an important question. We're taught in school that Lady Justice is blind, right? You know, you got the figure of justice, right? And she's holding the scales. But why? She's blindfolded. You know, I bet this generation of people think that's because she's, you know, read 50 Shades of Grey or something. It's because she's supposed to be blind. It doesn't matter if you're rich or poor, the color of your skin, what religion you have. And I know, look, this is, I'm sounding idealistic, and I'm not a simpleton. I get it. But one of the critical things that must separate our country from other countries that are serious kleptocracies and oligarchies is we have to hold our elected officials, our power brokers, and other potentates in our society to high standards. And it is interesting. You remember the amount of scandal and controversy that broke with the firing of James Comey by Donald Trump. But Comey, I mean, his level of complicity in covering up the scandals under Obama, this pay to play with the Clinton Foundation, it's epic. It's staggering. And to now have, and this is probably why Trump is fuming with Sessions and has been fuming at him for so long, is by allowing Sessions number two, Rod Rosenstein, when Sessions recused himself, Rod Rosenstein's the one who opened the door to the general counsel, excuse me, to the special counsel, and allowed Mueller to come back out of retirement. Mueller's knee deep in this too. What kind of motive, pray tell me. You think Mueller wants to peel back any layers here that would lead back to his bad deeds in office? No chance. No chance he wants to do it. Okay, there's a big poll out. Fox News reporting that Roy Moore and Doug Jones, Democrat and Republican in Alabama, are neck and neck. They're tied. And it's shaking the political order because, man, the Republican's supposed to win, and maybe the strategy that Bannon is out there pushing by pushing his candidates, his more conservative candidates, is backfiring. No, I'll tell you what I think. Don't go anywhere. After the break, I'm going to dissect this for you and give you the straight scoop. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
News. Talk. Evolve. 790 KABC.
Sam Rejofsky here, speaking out on behalf of my friend, Attorney Sweet James Bergener. Look, if you get into a car accident or hurt in any way and need an advocate, call Sweet James. And if you think you don't need an advocate and that you can do it on your own, you're wrong. Don't do that. Call Sweet James. Give him a shout. He's easy to talk to. Explain to him what's going on. He will listen. He's a great listener. And he'll take care of you and make sure that you get set in the right direction. So no recovery, no fee. You don't owe him anything if he doesn't obtain a settlement. Also, all consultations are free. So there's no outlay. There's no expense. It won't cost you anything. So what's there to lose? Nothing. 1-800-881-2021. 1-800-881-2021. Call Sweet James. And if you want to see what he looks like first, before you place that call, go check him out on his website, sweetjames.com. All right, Sam Nation, we are back live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Roy Moore is the controversial Republican running for Senate in Alabama. He's running against Doug Jones, who's a Democrat. We know nothing about Jones. Jones is vanilla. He is not being described in any way that matters by anyone in the national media because no one cares about Doug Jones. Everybody cares about Roy Moore. Why? Because Roy Moore is the guy that beat Luther Strange, who's actually the senator. So when Jeff Sessions vacated his seat to become attorney general, the governor appointed Luther Strange to fill that spot. Now, you know how these things generally work. When you get appointed to a position like that, to a vacated position, what you're basically getting is a wink, wink that now you get to run for re-election as an incumbent. And you know this. You know what I'm talking about. You don't. Oh, maybe you don't. But a lot of people do. When they vote for the incumbent. It's just people think, well, I'm not going to rock the boat. I'm not going to put somebody new in. So you get a tremendous advantage running as an incumbent, generally speaking. Okay? Well, Roy Moore, who was the this guy's rock and roll, man. You know, Roy Moore is out there, you know, defending the Ten Commandments, and he's a religious guy. He does some preaching in his church. So all these videos that everybody's playing of him saying crazy things, you know, quote unquote crazy things, it's all from him delivering sermons at church. He's at church. You should have heard the crazy things that Obama's pastor was saying. Boy, but we didn't let that factor into the election back in 08, did we? Okay. So Roy Moore, he's running. And now the big deal is that Fox News had a poll that came out. And they're neck and neck, 42% to 42%, dead heat. And all the pundits, all the talking heads right now are having a field day with this because they're saying, see, if the Republican Party tacks right, if they tack toward these pro-Trump candidates, what's going to happen? They're going to end up losing even in safe states like Alabama. Aha! Look at this. Bannon is the Democrats' best friend by pushing candidates like Roy Moore. Can I tell you what the real scoop here is? I mean, take the whole idea of polls out of this, because I don't believe the poll to begin with. And I studied the poll, and they're not sampling actual likely voters. They're sampling people who are interested in the election. I don't even know what the hell that means. People that are like interested in the election, like, yeah, man, I'm interested in the election. OK, yep. Gold star for you. When's the last time you voted? Oh, you never. OK. All right. Step aside. So that's the poll itself is flawed. No. So it's part of that. Well, and the Trump factor, do you know how much Trump won the state by last year? Last election, Trump won the state by 28 points. That is sort of the equivalent of an elephant sitting down on a mouse. OK, it's a crushing defeat. No, I have to get to this after the break. When I come back, I'm going to explain to you what's going to happen here. I will literally pull out a crystal ball and I will move my Sam Nation fingers over it and tell you what's going to happen here and why. Most important is the why. OK, don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
News.
Talk.
Evolve. 790 KABC.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio, 790 KBC. So this polling out of Alabama, the Alabama Senate race, everyone is watching this race very closely. It matters because it is a litmus test on to determine which of two competing philosophies is true. On one hand, you have the traditional thinking of the political establishment is you've got to run establishment, tried and tested candidates. Who cares if they're wishy-washy or whatnot? You can't have conservatives actually saying the kind of things that Trump is saying because they're never going to get elected. And on the other hand, you've got, no, you can't run the same candidates who are obstructing Trump's agenda because Trump's agenda is what got him elected. And it will eventually lead to races being lost. And most importantly, the agenda being lost that people wanted. So, two competing sides. Now this polling data that shows that these two races are neck and neck. These two candidates, excuse me. You know what the big difference between Roy Moore and Doug Jones really is here? The big difference is that there was a bruising primary fight on the Republican side. And you know this. You know this in races, maybe national races or races that you follow where one side kind of has a weaker primary. I think we saw that a little bit in this last election. I mean, the Republican primary took a lot longer, so Trump got a lot more collateral damage from other Republicans going into the general election. So one of the most, you know, one of the important things here to recognize is that if this poll were 100% accurate, you have a candidate that was coming out of a tough primary wounded. But time heals that. We're in October. The election's in November. Trust me, weeks go by and it'll sort itself out. And the other thing is, Roy Moore's opponent was the one that was supported by Trump. And Trump won the state by 20%. But listen, Trump's going to support Roy Moore, and he already has. So this thing will sort itself out. Trump won the state 28 points. This race is going to go to Roy Moore, barring some incredible event that I don't necessarily see happening. So there it is. I have a question for you. What do you think about grades? Well, I mean, you know what I think. I think, you know, performance measured is performance improved, right? I mean, that's the maxim. But there really is a trend right now. There's a trend in higher education to get away from grading. And I think it goes back to what we were talking about yesterday together. About this desperate fear that we have of our young youths and young adults being somehow challenged or being shaken or stirred and their feelings protected, that any measurement of performance is a threat to their emotional well-being. I know you know what I think about this, but I want to talk about this a little bit when we come back, because there's some interesting developments here. And I really do worry. So another hour of Sam Nation coming up next. Don't go anywhere. Got John Wolfe up next with the news.
News. Talk. Evolve. Talk Radio 790. KABC.
Hi, it's happening. The second hour of Sam Nation, week two, and so far going strong. Sam Rejofsky here, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC, about 8:04 here in the evening, Tuesday night. And I can't believe it's already Tuesday night. This week is just, as always, blowing by as quickly as it possibly can. No updates, speaking of blowing by, no updates on Hurricane Hillary or Hurricane Ophelia. Both weather systems hit Great Britain around the same time. Hurricane Ophelia, of course, have you heard about this? So just a crazy weather system moved toward England, Great Britain, British Isles, and brought so much dust from North Africa that it created this red glare, this red haze over the city. And I think, you know, when I was looking at pictures yesterday of what was going on, I saw it. You could see Big Ben, you know, London, the London skyline. And it really looked apocalyptic. It almost looked like the fires that we were having here on Monday earlier last week. So at any rate, Hurricane Ophelia and Hurricane Hillary, she's mending with a broken ankle or foot or whatever it is, and no word there. So yes, I'm going to read the book. I will. I'm really not excited about it. One, I have to buy the book. And that part of it just hurts me. It hurts me to give that woman any money. But I'm going to have to. So I'll buy the book. I will. I'm do it for you. This is the cross I bear as your host. I will get the book. And not only that, I'm going to make this commitment right now. I'm going to make it on air so producer Robbie can't weasel out of it. See, I'm going to commit producer Robbie to some serious workplace torture. What is it? I'm going to sentence Robbie to 16 hours and 40 minutes of listening to Hillary Clinton's audiobook. What? You know, you think you're always complaining. I know she does not have a soothing voice. You're right. You got to break it up. We got to break it up. But you know that there's going to be comic gold there in that audio file. Yeah. So anyway, we've committed and we're going to do that. And at some point we will break that up and deliver the best of the best for you. So don't buy Hillary's book. Don't buy it. I will get it. That way you don't all have to buy copies, and I will get one copy and one version of the audiobook, and then I will give you the best of it. I guarantee that. Okay. What's the worst grade you ever got? I'll tell you a story about law school. One time in law school, I got a grade that was so bad that I thought it had to be a mistake. Has that ever happened to you? Where it's just so beneath any normal, you know what your normal grades are. You're an A student, you're a B student, you're a C student. And if you're an F student, you're not a student for very long. So that there it is. I mean, so you know what you're expecting. So when you're an A student, you know, and you suddenly get a D, it's like a whoa, you know? And in my case, I won't tell you what kind of student I was, but I will tell you that the grade I got was beneath even my average. And so it was a whoa type of moment. But you know what? When I reflect back on that whoa moment, it was a wake-up call. You get a bad grade, and you remember this. It doesn't matter if you're not a student anymore. You were at one point or another. You were a student. And unless you're phenomenally talented, gifted, and have no life, occasionally you got a bad grade. And when that happened, if you're conscientious and you cared and you wanted to progress and make it in life, it was one of those moments that you sort of gathered your thoughts about, okay, I gotta study more. Or I got to drink less, or I got to, well, not in elementary school, but you know what I mean, in college. or graduate school. We'll say graduate school. But that's it. So now there's this movement. There's this, and it's gaining steam. There's more and more learned persons that are talking about doing away with the grading system. And at the crux of the argument is that grades... they lower self-esteem. See, I'm going to explain this to you. So when a child gets a bad grade, it hurts their feelings. It makes that child feel worse about themselves. It makes them doubt their ability to achieve, let alone succeed. And that's why we have to do away from it. We have to do away with it. And this is, this parallels the whole movement of giving everybody a trophy. So you participate, win or lose, both sides in a sports tournament, both sides get a trophy. And so kids, if you go to a kid's room nowadays, it's littered with trophies. I don't know if you have kids, but it's trophies everywhere. And they don't mean anything to the kids. They're worthless. Because they don't represent any success. They don't represent any form of achievement, of accomplishment. Now, I'm going to tell you where self-esteem comes from. Are you ready for this? And you know this. You intuitively know this. You listen to the program and you get it. You get life. But to these learned, very educated, scholarly people who are trying to tell us that we ought to do away with these, with any form of performance measuring systems or protocols, I will say this. Self-esteem comes from achievement, comes from improvement, comes from accomplishment. You succeed at something and you feel good. And you know, and by the way, this I don't need a degree in psychology to figure this out, because you know what? I'm old enough to have experienced highs and lows. And lows, by the way, like I explained with my grade, or you know, was telling you the story in law school, how I got that terrible grade, and that wounded me. It was a good wound to have, because you know what I did after that? I lickety-splitted it up and got moving and did a little extra studying and a little extra reading to dig myself out of a hole. And conversely, when against great challenge and obstacles. By the way, when I went to law school and grad school, I was working and I had two kids. We had our third child when I was, second year of law school. I was crazy. I was so busy. So I actually was not partying it up. But I was just busy and I was slammed with life. But do you know how good I felt when I had a great grade, when I had an achievement, when I succeeded on an exam? Of course. And we remember that growing up. We remember that in school, in elementary school. And we remember that we remember a challenge of winning a game or winning a tournament and how good that feels. But feeling good has to come with a sacrifice. See, you don't. That's the critical thing. You don't feel good when you're just given stuff. It's like you ever play video games or anything like that? I don't. But I remember a long time ago, I played a game on a computer and you had two modes on this game. And one was cheat mode, where you could get away with anything, right? You just go in there and you're shooting things and that's it. And then the second mode was non-cheat mode. Well, guess which one is more fun to play? It's not the cheat mode one. And why is that? It's so simple. Because you want a challenge. It's inherent in us. We as human beings need a challenge. We as human beings need for things to be a little bit difficult because it's actually more fun that way in the context of a game. And in the context of life, it's more rewarding. I'm blown away. So this report, there's some Bay Area schools up in San Francisco here. Of course. Yeah, this is where all insanity comes from. It's from beautiful San Francisco. So, yeah, there's a growing consensus that letter grades A through F are outdated. We want to create transcripts with details about each student's achievement. This reminds me of if you've got a pet. In pet doggy daycare, and you get a little doggy, these foo-foo places, you get a little doggy daycare report card, and Fido was so great today, and he wagged his tail, and he played with the other dogs, and boy, is Fido great. I mean, it's the equivalent of that. And I'm starting to feel, I sound like a grumpy old man talking about this. I want my kids to grow up in a world where their performance is measured. Before the top of the hour, I said performance measured is performance improved. It's a maxim. It's a saying, a colloquialism. But it's a saying because it's true. It's correct. You know, when you, well, I mean, an example of this. I can give you a work example. I know, for example, at the office a long time ago, every team had a requirement to perform a certain level. And performance was really not measured, or at least not publicly measured. And we began publicly measuring it and showing it where each team every month was. And teams began to get competitive. And I will tell you, the business began doing much better. People began performing, and as a consequence, our clients started to do better because we were performing on their behalf. It was a simple change, a simple tweak in just how we did was measure performance. We didn't change anything else. But the literally the month that change went in, things radically changed for the better. And I'm trying to imagine. I was kind of a lazy kid growing up, and if I hadn't had grades to hold me accountable, I don't think I would have done anything. And by the way, how do you determine what kid gets into what school? I mean, how do you even determine? Imagine a world with no GPA, right? That's what they're talking about. Instead of GPAs, a grade point average of your past performance. It would be replaced by some sort of a novel where every teacher writes into it, all your glorious doings. No, I'm telling you, Robbie, you're shaking your head. I'm worried, though, that this is part of the movement in general to protect and shield young people from feeling any type of distress. Because undoubtedly, yes, I agree, getting a bad grade is distressing. It is. But the thing is there's two approaches. My approach, I think it's meant to be. It ought to be. And it's a good thing because it helps shock you back to higher performance. But this other side, this microaggression, toting side of the argument, they think that this is damaging to fragile young beings and they carry this mentality all the way up through college. And then what happens is, I'm telling you, the inevitable thing that happens is that imagine a world no grades, right? No grades, no trigger warnings anytime anything controversial is mentioned. Every microaggression is managed and is evaluated by some sort of overseer, be it an administrator or a teacher. And then, voila, one day to the next, this young adult leaves college and enters the workforce. And there, an employer, a boss, at some point reprimands them because, in the real world, there are deadlines and there are expectations and there are things that you can't do, along with things that you must do. And what's the result? I'm convinced that we're going to, in the coming years, have people just totally melting. I do. I think if this the purpose of school is to prepare you for life. And where do raises come from? They don't come from what's written in your book or what I subjectively think of you as an employee, as an employer. Raises come from performance. What did you accomplish? I'm a lawyer. In court, you win or you lose. Losing attorneys don't get hired. Surgeons that have people die on them on the operating room table, they don't get repeat business. I'm sorry. Yeah, sure. I really like that doctor over there who's likely to kill me. I really want that guy to operate on me. Please, where do I sign up? I don't know. What am I missing here? Gotta go. We got a quick time out here. Back right after this. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
News. Talk. Evolve. 790 KABC.
Do away with grades. That's what many on the left want to do to solve our education crisis. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. And that's the reason for it, by the way. I didn't mention that because there's an education crisis. Whenever you deal with liberals, everything's a crisis, by the way. Everything's a crisis. But then say, look, we've dropped. There's a piece in Slate.com about this. That grading students A to F has become synonymous with education itself. It talks about how America's long, steady decline in education compared to countries like Poland, Canada, Ireland, South Korea, Denmark. Look, we got to do something about it. And this is the quote, it's becoming increasingly clear that the rigid and judgmental foundation of modern education is the origin point for many of our worst qualities and blah, blah, blah. Ha. Let me tell you about the Czech Republic. It's on, by the way, very highly ranked on this education list, too. Slate didn't mention them. Very similar system to in Poland. You want to talk about a rigid education system? I mean, they mentioned South Korea. Do you have any idea what Korean schools are like? I was talking about this with a friend the other day. I mean, she laughed, literally laughed out loud. I mean, in Korea, are you kidding me? It's so strict. But in Europe, I can speak for this. Grades are extremely important. Testing is extremely important. By the way, college track education is determined not at 18 like it is here, but in many cases as early as 14 and 13 even. You know, at an early teen age, testing determines whether you even get to go to college someday. Talk about pressure. You know, the actual problem with our system, you know, we've for years now, we have allowed students to graduate and move on grade to grade, promote from 5th grade, 6th grade to 7th grade to 8th grade, regardless of their performance. This is the problem. You've got people taking, they say here, 40-year low in the SATs. You have people taking the SATs who have no business taking SATs. That's the cold, hard truth. They are measuring people taking college entry exams from other countries who have already been sorted 5 years before our people have. Why? Because the self-esteem movement started 30 years ago. This BS has been around. This is nothing new. I think I'm one of the first generations to be fully ensconced in the self-esteem movement. Be your best. Be you. You be you. The greatest lie ever told a young person ever. Because what happens if you are a big fat idiot? Well, I'm serious. What if you're a giant idiot and you need to wise up? What if you're what if you have homicidal tendencies? What are you going to say? Oh, you know what? Just be yourself, man. Just be you. You do you. Nonsense. Don't be a homicidal maniac. You develop empathy. Change. But the point is how education is being measured vis-a-vis other countries. And an 18-year-old being tested to enter college in the Czech Republic is not the same person as the 18-year-old taking the SAT here and rolling the dice going, well, I just, sort of ended up here in the 12th grade and this is my next step. And wow, that SAT score is low. So it's interesting, and it, by the way, there's a takeaway here that is greater. It is greater than education itself, than the debate on education, and that is that when liberals have a policy that begins to fail and begins to stink, instead of going, oh, hey, this thing with self-esteem, it didn't work, promoting people one grade to the next because, they just age up and that's what we do, that doesn't work. No, libs double down on this stuff. They never admit they're wrong, and they go, you know what the real problem is? Measuring performance. We got to just do away with that in toto. And they never, ever, ever admit that their nonsense policy got us into a predicament, into whatever predicament it is, in the first place. All right, don't go anywhere. John Wolfe up next with the news. Should we grade him after he does the news? We'll grade him. John Wolfe up next. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
News. Talk. Evolve. Talk Radio 790. KABC.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. I give John Wolfe an A. Definitely. That was legitimately some good news reporting. And now think about this. How good does he feel? Because I'm a tough grader. I want you to know. I was close to an A minus, but he pulled it through in the end for a solid A. We were talking about grading and how some progressive educators think it's a great idea to do away with it. Of course, it's nonsense. Nonsense. Performance measured is performance improved. All right. You know who should get their performance graded, in my view, is the media in general. Now, we just gave John Wolfe an A. But the rest of the media, not so fortunate. Today, there was some news from Project Veritas. This is the group that is led by James O'Keefe. Now, he's he's famous for creating these undercover videos. He exposed the inner decay within the Hillary Clinton campaign of some various shenanigans going on. What else did he do? Acorn. He literally took down Acorn with his undercover videos. He posed as a pimp. Do you remember this? And he went in with a girl, and he was getting seed money from Acorn, the government program established by Obama to help his business, his pimp business. Okay, if you remember this. Just a bit of background. Well, anyway, he has some great undercover video of a New York Times. That's right, a New York Times senior editor, Des Shue, speaking about how Trump is an idiot. And she starts to say it's a little bit difficult to hear because this is a surreptitiously captured video. But if she starts to say, I feel like Trump is just like sort of an idiot in ways. Listen to this audio.
I feel like Trump is just a sort of an idiot in a lot of ways, just an oblivious idiot. I think one of the things that maybe journalists were thinking about is like, oh, if we write about him, about how it's like insane and crazy he is and ludicrous his policies are, then maybe people will read it and be like, oh, wow, like we should vote for him.
And she goes on to talk about how Pence is even worse, religious, you know, religious people can't be trusted. It's crazy stuff. And what it reveals, now, I don't think it necessarily is earth shattering here. We knew this. We know this from the New York Times. But what it does betray is open contempt of Trump, but also privately. There's no concealing a bias that they have. There's no concealing their point of view or their perspective on this. And there's, when we come back, I want to play for you. There's an editor of Reason. His name is Matt Welch. And he talks about his experience working with Dean Baquet, who's the New York Times editor. He has a very interesting take on this. I'm going to actually play for you what he says about this in his own words. Because I think you just got to understand it's not independent journalism. It's not. These people have opinions and they're influencing what they write very much so. Okay, Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, don't go anywhere. Back after this.
Talk radio. 790 KABC.
Sam Rzhovsky speaking on behalf of my friend, Attorney Sweet James Bergner. If you've been in an accident, if you've been hurt, if you've had something happen to you where someone else has done it, is that complicated? I guess that's kind of complicated. Simple way, if someone's hurt you, call Sweet James. Have him help you through the process. Have him guide you and have him get you the justice that you deserve. Don't try to do it alone, okay? This is not a do-it-yourself project. Go to a professional. Go to the guy that gets this done, has gotten it done for thousands of clients, been around for 13, 14 years. He's got this thing down to a science, and he knows how to help you, and he really cares. He'll listen to you. He'll get your case on the right track. Give him a call. Super easy to talk to, 1-800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021, or visit his website, sweetjames.com. If you missed our conversation about grades and schools that want to do away with grades, get the podcast. I lay it all out, and hopefully you will agree with me. Talking about the media. I mentioned Project Veritas. James O'Keefe caught the New York Times, one of the New York Times editors, on tape talking about how Trump is a big idiot and how it's their responsibility. You heard what she said? She says, oh, if we write about him, about how insanely crazy he is and how ludicrous his policies are, then maybe people will read it and be like, oh, wow, we shouldn't vote for him. Now, is that journalism or is that advocacy? See, it's advocacy. And if you couple this with previous statements from various people being caught, you know, on hot mics and otherwise surreptitiously surreptitiously recorded. You'll hear, you know, remember that person said, forget which paper, but they said, you know, there's no way that we can be objective with this guy. I mean, he's so crazy out there in crazy land that we can't even be objective. But they can't be objective because he represents an existential threat to them and their way of thinking. These are hardcore liberals. And sure, in their bubble, Trump is a crazy man. Because in their bubble, they want, you know, I don't know, they want rainbows and unicorns and Care Bears and just a world where everything's free. And there are no grades and there, you know, we have pillow rooms and we have, the liberals' dream world is not the place I want to be in. So, of course, to them, Trump is, I mean, he's just he's backwards and he's regressive. But their progressive agenda scares the crap out of me. So here is Matt Welch, editor at Reason, talking about his experience with New York Times editor Dean Baquet. Listen to this.
The editor of the New York Times was the editor of the LA Times when I worked there. One of the things that I tried to do there was say, at least in the opinion section, let's have bios of everybody on the editorial board and everybody who works within the opinion section. And part of those online bios will include, I don't know, you know, who you have voted for in presidential elections going back. And if you want to see a look of abject panic on the face of a newspaper employee, and it's because we all know why it is. They all said, well, people will use it against us. And well, maybe, just maybe, that's a sign that you should be taking a little bit of an internal survey and discuss whether 97% of your employees at an allegedly impartial institution all share the same beliefs. That it should be an internal gut check.
Okay. See, 97% of your employees all have the same opinion, all have the same orientation, all have the same way of thinking. I mean, far more interesting at a newspaper would be if you try to even it out a little bit. And this guy, by the way, Matt Welch, he's not a conservative. He's writing for Reason magazine, and it's not the advocacy of a conservative ideology. This is merely to show that independent journalism, really for the most part, is a fraud in this country. It's a total farce. There is no semblance of independence at these big newspapers and these cable networks. It's not. They're not happening. Or mainstream media, period. Okay, don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio, 790 KBC.
News. Talk. Evolve. 790 KBC.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, have you ever left a kid somewhere? There's a couple in Utah, and I say couple loosely because they're polygamists. That means one man and some variety of multiple females, all comprising one lovely family. This is a thing, by the way. It really actually is a thing in Utah. If you're driving up the 15 freeway, there's parts of a road when you're getting maybe past Nephi. I know this. My wife is from Utah, and I'm driving up through, and you'll see these big compounds, these houses that are pretty sprawling. There's polygamists up there. Anyway, so this is what happened. The Salt Lake Tribune wrote a piece, "How does a 3-year-old get left at a Utah corn maze?" Well, it's a numbers issue, polygamous father says. This is a great story. So they go with how many kids? Hold on. I'll tell you. 14 children to a corn maze. Of course they're going to lose one. It's a maze. And they brought 14 kids with them. So they went in two cars. You know, it's the classic story, right? We thought you had him. You thought him. And then they got home. And, you know, with 14 kids, you know, 13 kids and 14 kids looks very similar. Just going to say that. Apparently, the family watched a scary movie during which a number of the kids fell asleep. I think that's the craziest part of the story, in my view. Right? I show a scary movie to my kids, and they're going to be up all night. Not these kids. They fell asleep. And then in the morning, it took them all the way to the morning to figure out that this kid was gone. Meanwhile, Child Protective Services came and cared for the child overnight. And apparently authorities are calling it no harm, no foul. They don't think it was any neglect, just a problem that can happen to anyone who has 14 kids and takes them to a corn maze. By the way, though, not that it would take you all night, but have you ever done that with your spouse? Have you ever, I thought you had him. No, I thought you had him. Meanwhile, little Johnny is back at, back at the soccer field crying. I think some form of that has happened with every parent at some point. This New York Times bias story, I think the reason that I like that quote, that insight there by Matt Welch, editor of Reason magazine, is that when he was with the LA Times, led by Dean Baquet, who is now the editor of the New York Times, back when he was the editor at the LA Times, Matt Welch had said to Dean Baquet, look, we ought to just kind of give a little short bio on every person that's writing in an editorial section, not even the journalist, but just a short bio. And the reaction was, whoa, we can't do that. Baquet basically panicked. We can't do that. People will use it against us. And that's just it. I think it's a function of disclosure. I have a bias here. I tell you who I voted for. I lay it all out. I'm an open book. My opinion is very much a part of what I do here. And I cannot imagine writing or speaking in an opinionated way and trying to pass it off as somehow balanced and independent. It's not. We all have our biases. And if these journalists can't keep their biases to themselves, then they ought to at least disclose it. There ought to be disclosure. We put a warning sign on stuff, sulfites, warning, contains sulfites. I'm not talking about wine here. Maybe I am. I don't know. Anyway, we're off tomorrow night. The Kings are on. We'll be back here Thursday night, 7 p.m. Another 2 hours of radio fun. Have a great night. Talk to you Thursday.
Talk Radio, 790 KABC.